I'm Maria with the Why, and welcome to Startup to Success, where I navigate through the whys behind entrepreneurship for anyone looking to start or scale their business.
Hello, welcome to Startup to Success. Today, my guest, my very special guest, is Stevanna Avens, a female entrepreneur, activist, politician, and now a nonprofit founder. Stevanna Avens is the epitome of the statement, be the change you want to see. A 28-year resident of the city of Adelanto, California, she's a mother of four who went through the loss of her daughter, the fight of her life, and came out on the other side determined to change the way the CFS system currently operates. Stevanna, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I am so thrilled to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to speak with you today.
You know, I didn't have the opportunity to learn a little bit about the nonprofit, but I want to sort of jump into the nonprofit that cover that. But before we do that, I want you to give me a little bit of a backstory, especially your daughter. I am so sorry. My condolences to you. But if you can just kind of share your story and how you evolved into the nonprofit, that would be amazing.
You know it. Yeah. So we, 8 years ago, a little over 8 years ago, I had a daughter. And at 5 weeks, she passed away. Just, you know, I was at work and my husband sends me a text like, you need to go to the hospital. Haven wasn't breathing. And I just took that to mean like she wasn't breathing, but now she's breathing and she's at the hospital and they're checking her out, is how I interpreted what he said. And I get there and our life at that moment was flipped upside down. It went, you know, we had detectives and I had to wait for the coroner and they're telling me my daughter died and I got to go to the police station. It was crazy. Definitely crazy 24 hours. You know, the next morning we were called and asked to do lie detector tests. My husband and I both passed lie detector tests to, we thought, prove our innocence, right? Children and Family Services got involved, of course, which as they should have, right? When an infant dies and nobody knows why, then please do an investigation. We passed lie detector tests. We complied with everything they wanted us to do for 6 weeks. We took our kids to it's a CAC, it's the Children's Assessment Center, which is funded by CFS. It's their doctors, and you go to all of their stuff, and we did all that, everything they asked us to do, every document they asked for, we provided for them. But nonetheless, after 6 weeks, they stepped in and they took our two living children at that time. And so we began that fight. You know, I didn't understand the way CFS worked before my family was thrusted into an investigation and then a case with them. So after about a year and a half of fighting for that, within that year and a half, they gave my son, who's now 17, to his biological father. He was considered a non-offending parent, even though he admitted to being on drugs. They said that was a safer place for him to be than with me, which is crazy because normally they remove kids from parents that are on drugs, but to each their own. And then by the time we finished the court case, my now 9-year-old was about 3. And they said, you know, even though we didn't find any of these allegations to be true, he's now been with your mom longer than he's been with you. So it would be detrimental to his health to return him to you. So they terminated my rights for him, or at that time I was married, my husband and I's rights. And my mom had to adopt my now 9-year-old. Fast forward 4 years, you know, and so even sitting in that, it was like, what the hell? How did I get here? You know, but I didn't really know what to do with any of that. I'm a true believer that we go through things for a reason, right? That there's something that we're supposed to learn to do. And so I didn't know what to do. But 4 years later, my husband convinced me to have another kid. I was over children. I said, listen, we had 2 boys, then we had 2 miscarriages, then we had our daughter, then she died, then CFS, no more kids, we're good. Like, we're not doing that anymore. But he convinced me, you know, I finally agreed, and we had our youngest son, who's now 4. And I had to have an emergency C-section with him. And before I could even sit up, for all you C-section mommies, you know, you got to lay down for 4 hours before you can even start to get up and move around. And before I could even sit up, CFS was back in my hospital room telling me that they were contemplating taking this child as well. Simply on the premise that we had a case 4 years ago. So not that he was in danger, that we had abused him or anything, but the fact that we had a case. And they did. They ended up coming back and removing him. My sister took him, and the same thing. We fought the case. It took about 2 years to fight through that case after with appeals and all the things. And at the end of that, they said, well, you know, yeah, we don't have any signs of that you're an abusive parent, but now he's never lived with you. He only knows your sister. And so it would be detrimental to his health to return him to you. So they terminated my rights. Praise God, I have transcripts. I'm sure this story sounds insane. I have transcripts, guys. You can read the whole thing.
I've never heard of such a thing. Oh, it's my. Crazy.
So after Declan, my now 4-year-old, his case, I realized that, you know, I started doing more research and looking into, like, how often does this happen? Like, one, how can they do this to people, right? We entrust this system to protect our children. And, you know, here I am, 2 cases where we've done nothing and they can't prove that we've done anything. And we've taken a lot of tests and we've complied and done all the things and still nothing. So, you know, what's going on? And what I started finding is the Attorney General has done investigations with CFS. And what they find is that 3.5 million kids a year are removed. And of that, 2.7 are wrongfully removed. So they are just taking kids that don't need to be taken, you know, and putting them in most times worse situations, because even in the same report, the 800,000 kids that needed to be removed are being put into worse situations in foster care. Like, their chances of abuse, be it physical, sexual, mental, and fatalities, are higher in foster care than they are with the abusive parent, right? So I always like to make it clear that we don't want to dismantle CFS, because there are those 800,000 kids that need help, right? But something has to change when you're getting it wrong 2.7 million times a year. If the IRS got our taxes wrong 2.7 million times a year,
right,
we would have a World War III.
Like,
Civil War number 2, right? We'd go crazy. So that just kind of transitions me right into, if you don't mind, Haven's Future and why the nonprofit is what it is.
That's amazing. I mean, those numbers are just mind-boggling. But it's amazing that you turned that around and started a nonprofit, you know?
Yeah.
But, so tell me what the nonprofit does. What's the purpose of it, and how can people support you? I mean, this is incredible. You need so much support to get there.
All the support. Please support us. So Haven's Future is the name of our nonprofit. And what we look to do, so I'll show you micro and macro levels, right? So on the smaller scale, we have some programs, you know, parenting, therapy, AA, anger management. We have a transitional program in place for youth, because what we know is that when kids turn 18 at 12:01 in the morning, the foster parents or the group homes are putting them out because they're no longer getting paid for them. Right. So we want to make sure that those kids are well equipped and ready to transition into the world, right? So we have a transitional program for them. And that's just kind of what we're doing in the interim until we're able to build our first facility, which will be, the best way I can explain it is like a glorified hotel, right? We're going to have 2- and 3-bedroom suites where, when a family is accused of abuse, instead of for them taking the children and putting them in foster care, we move the whole family into the facility where they can then be monitored while CFS builds their case.
Smart.
Right, because what was so annoying for me was every time we went to court, it was, we don't have evidence, we're waiting, we're still looking for evidence, we're still looking for evidence. And it's like, how the hell do you get to keep my kids while you have no evidence of what you're accusing me of, right? And so the facilities will house the families, of course, and all of those services will take place. We know these are services that CFS typically recommends for families, and so we'll have those services on site for the families to be able to go ahead and get certified with those services, so that when their day in court comes, they'll already have all of these things completed. 1, 2, we're going to have, so I guess that's 2 and now 3. We also have some lawyers that are coming on board to lock arms with us, because I spent on my first case, you have to have a public defender. You can't represent yourself. Me and my husband had to have different lawyers because we're both being accused separately. So we're both, you know, defendants. And my husband's public defender was amazing. Mine was trash. So I had to hire an attorney. The first case, we spent $20,000. The second case was $40,000. And so, and I didn't have that money, right? Praise God, my grandfather invested well, and he was able to pay those, to foot those bills. But we have lawyers that are going to come and work with us pro bono with our family.
Nice.
And ensure that they have the proper representation and the best chance of getting their kids back.
That's amazing. That's so great of you to turn something so challenging. I'm sure it sucked the life out of you. You know, you probably had to work and take care of it. That's just too much. I've never heard of heard of the fact that they could just, without having the, you know, evidence on you, they could just take your kid and just say, listen, it's going to take a few years for us to determine, but this is how it is. That's just so. Yeah. And I'm glad that you're creating more awareness and people can know about this. Is there, tell me a little bit about the way you started the nonprofit. Obviously you had the mission, you had the reason, right? Your why was so strong. It still is so strong. It's so personal. And you know, in a way, even though it's a nonprofit, I look at this as an entrepreneurial journey because you are diving into this whole world of, you know, this new venture that you're taking on to make a difference, to make this world a better place, to make sure that no other parent goes through it the way you've gone through it and support them. But I'm pretty confident that there are the challenges of sort of running the nonprofit that, you know, or just even starting the nonprofit. So can you share a little bit about what the steps were? What were the first things you started doing? And, you know, if someone's listening and they're inspired to start a nonprofit of their own, like, what steps would they take?
Yeah, definitely. You know, how I came to be was my team. Praise God for my team. You know, shameless plug, shout out to Rose Lyles and TJ Campbell. They pushed me, right? Because this is 8 years in the making. And I was like, guys, I don't want to relive this every day. And I don't want to be the face. And I don't want none of those things. I just want to help families. And they said, well, the best way to do it is to have a space for people to know who you are, why you're doing this, how you're helping them. And so those two really pushed me. We developed the programs and decided we're going to do the nonprofit just last August. I think our documents are all August 5th, right? So I guess that's our start date officially with the state of California. And it was tough. You know, the first steps, I would say that what I would tell people is don't do what I did, right? I was like, what form do I need? Okay, let me fill it out real quick on the state secretary. No. Find yourself a company that helps with the startup so you know that all of your forms are in order. A shameless plug to JCI Agency here in California and Dawood Akil specifically. Once I started, because I didn't tell him, even though I knew him, he said, Sivana, you need this, that, blah, 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 all these things. And I was like, God dang, well, where were you 2 months ago? Like, so definitely find a company that helps startup businesses, you know, corporations, LLCs, all of that's the same.
Yeah.
Nonprofit is just your tax status.
Exactly. Right?
So definitely find someone that can help you to make sure you have all your forms in place, because they'll take your status and they'll shut you down if you don't have all of your forms, you know, whatever your Secretary of State rules and regulations are. But and then it's
how long did it take for them to approve the nonprofit? I know sometimes it takes a while, right?
Long time, yes. About 4 months it took us.
Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad. I've heard some people say a year, up to a year, which is ridiculous, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. And maybe we're just lucky, right? Yeah. But we also call them a lot too, so maybe that's it too. We're like,
that's it.
Because we wanted to launch, you know, we were ready to launch, and they kept, you know, we're like, we need the numbers so people can donate, and girl, a mess. Right. But yeah, so it just, you know, be polite when you call your Secretary of State. They're workers like we are. And, you know, but yeah, definitely getting your number, getting all those other forms you have to do first and then applying for, but if you have one of those agencies in place, all of that for you.
What was the name of the agency you said you wish you
did? JCI Agency.
Awesome. Awesome.
They're amazing. 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 Huge plug for them. They do great things, and they do all kinds of sectors. They're wonderful people over there, JCI.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Now, in terms of raising funds, right? Like, obviously, a nonprofit, you need to be able to raise money so that you could do what you do. And I can imagine how expensive it could be to house a family or, you know, some of the services that you'd be providing. How have you started raising money yet? And what's the process like?
Yeah, so we've done a couple things. So the first thing we did is we launched with a golf tournament, which was a lot of fun. It was a great way to bring in some I wouldn't call it quick money, right? Because it's a lot of planning. But it definitely was a great way to launch and to let folks know what we were doing and to reach out to folks who maybe wouldn't come to a gala or a banquet, you know, right, or ribbon cutting, but they'll come play golf, right? And so we did a golf tournament, which was great, raised quite a bit of money. We're actually going to do another one in May, because May is a foster kids awareness month. And so our annual golf tournament will happen every year in May. So we got to do another one in a few months. I'm exhausted or even thinking about it. So that's one way to get funding.
So do you do that from, you guys plan everything from scratch? Like you just literally just.
Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. What's that project like?
Well, myself and Rose, one of my business partners, we are event coordinators by trade, right? So it kind of helps that we have that background. Golf tournaments are a lot of work.
Yeah.
But they're also, you know, once the golfers get out on the course, you've got a good 4 or 5 hours of chill downtime, right? While they're actually golfing, you drive around, you kind of talk mess with them. It's fun. But it took a lot of planning. This one for May, we're already started planning like the day after the tournament. We had our tournament January 24th, January 25th. We're on the phone with the team. Like, all right, guys, so let's get going for next time. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of marketing. It's a lot of, you know, follow-ups, because people are like, oh, we're going to play, but then they don't pay. And then you got to call them a million times. But I definitely recommend, people that want to do golf tournaments, go ahead and hire yourself an event coordinator that specializes in big events like that. And don't, because for us, because we're still small, which I guess most of all the people we're talking to, right? Yeah. So we're gonna be small. Yeah. We did a lot of the work ourselves because we know how to do it. Right. But I was telling my team the other day, I said, when do we get to the point where I just tell you all the budget and then I'll see you on the date? I'm trying to get to that level because we're trying to do all the nonprofit stuff and we've already got families calling and asking for help.
Right.
And so my focus wants to be there, but then we have an event, you know? So, it was very hard to do. So I would just say, if you want to do a fundraiser like that to start, I would make sure that all of your systems, your SOPs, your process, all that stuff for your nonprofit is in order first before you start launching your event. Because once you put that name out there and our website's fire, shout out to Rose again. Once you put your website out there, people are going to start looking for that help or, you know, whatever service you provide, or if it's products or whatever. And so you got to be prepared for that. And that was a mistake that I made in thinking nobody's going to know who we are until after this golf tournament. We'll be fine. And then I started getting calls and I'm like, oh crap, I got to find people resources and I got to do this and I got to do that. And they're up and down California. Praise God. Blessing and a curse, right? I can't wait till we're nationwide, but so far everybody that's called has been here in California. So I'm able to just, you know, get my connections up and down the coast, but, definitely have your processes and your plans and how you're going to help these people or whatever your products or whatever already in place. If you're going to be selling stuff, make sure you already got stuff on hand as soon as you're ready to launch. Because
now, as far as the golf tournament goes, the first initial one that you did you spend money out of pocket? I mean, I'm assuming to put this together, it cost you money.
Yeah, it was a little bit, it's a little pricey to do a golf tournament. The good thing is we had great sponsors. So up front, of course, we had to hire a few people up front that we had to just pay. You know, the team was like, all right, how much you investing? Okay, you're going to cover the fees for the nonprofit. Okay, cool. You're going to cover. And so, you know, the beginning was a little tough and pray again for my team. Thank God. But once we announced and we started soliciting sponsors, that was where our first thing. Okay. If we can get sponsors in first, then we can lock in the venue and we can lock in this, that, and the other. And then the golfer fees were just, you know, to basically pay for their golfing.
Got it. Now you just kind of led into the next question that I wanted to ask, sponsors.
Yeah.
How's that process? I mean, it's almost, even though it's a whole different, I guess, way of asking for money, but ultimately any startup that needs to grow, they need to learn how to ask for things.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that process. What was it like?
Yeah. So sponsorships and, you know, even for not only for the event, but for the organization as a whole, I would say start with companies and organizations that you know, right? Your friends and family are great, but let's be real. Yeah. Most times they're the ones calling us the craziest, right? So I wouldn't, and try not to get mad at your people. Don't get mad at your people for not financially supporting your dreams. Your visions aren't their visions. God gave them to you. So you have to run with that. So I would reach out to organizations and or businesses or people that you know that already own businesses that you think will be in line with your plan, right? Whatever your mission or your vision is, reach out to people that you know that will support that mission or vision. You know, for me, I reach out to other organizations or organizations that I know are big on giving back, right? Let me not use big words that I can't remember how to say. So, you know, other organizations that care about kids, for me, right? You know, foster youth. other organizations that are constantly giving back or that care about social justice and equity, right? Or if that's what your line of work is. If your line of work is, I don't know, planting trees, you want to reach out to people that are environmental friendly, or they're looking to change the environment, or they care about the air. So it really just depends on what you're doing. I would definitely start with your network of business people, not your network of friends and families who work 4 to 5s. Don't go to them. Go to business people that you know, companies that you frequent. If you don't currently frequent companies, start doing that. Like, I only use this cleaners, and I talk to the owner, and I, you know, just friendly. Don't ask them for money. Just, hey, how are you doing? How's the business going? You know, and then you become friends, and now this is now your network. Luckily for me, you know, my city council title gets me in rooms with people that I get to understand and know how they work, and then decide, do I even want to partner with them? Do I want their money?
Right.
Now I can't vote for those people. Some of our city people that do business in the city, I can no longer vote on their items. If they ever come up and get on the agenda, that's a wrap. I can't vote for them. But they support me. And what's more important for me is not my city council title. That's here today. It may be gone November, right? But they know my heart. They know what I'm doing, and they're willing to put their dollars behind my vision. That's what's important to me. So start there. If you're a nonprofit like us, grants, you know, we're not only are we taking grant writing workshops for ourselves, so we know how to write our own, but we're also in the market looking for a grant writer, right? Someone that's already well versed and knows how to do this, because like you said, it's going to cost us, you know, a couple million dollars to build just that first facility, and our goal is to be nationwide. And so, you know, it's going to take funding, and it's going to take partnership with Children and Family Services and the different counties. And so, you know, all of those sources are sources of funding, right? The county needs to find a better way to do this. First, your county needs to look at their numbers and be real about their numbers. Let's start there. And then they need to figure out how to better serve their community. And if Haven's future is there, why not give those dollars to us? Right.
And you mentioned the grant writing and the grant opportunities. I know that tends to be challenging for many nonprofits. It's almost like a whole job in itself. Besides you having to run your nonprofit, and you know, you have to just be on the lookout for these grant opportunities. But are there any, I mean, are there good opportunities for you to even bid on, or has it been a bit challenging to find the right fit?
It's a little bit of both, right? Because we're new, so we don't have like proof of concept.
Right.
That kind of puts us at a lower advantage. So the way grants work, they're typically scaled, right? Let's just say it's out of 10 points. Well, okay, you've been in business 10 years and you've been doing this and you have these results. You're going to get more points than us, brand new. This is our concept. We think this will work. Now, our transitional program is easy. That's actually been proven. We have proof of concept for that. We've actually partnered with another organization for that. But building these facilities is brand new. Nobody in the nation is doing this. So, you know, will it work? I think so, right? My partners think so. And we've in all of the social workers and the folks that we talk to that work for CFS is like, this would be a heaven sent for us. This would make our lives so much easier. It would lighten our caseload. Right now in San Bernardino County, you're supposed to have a social worker working for CFS is supposed to have no more than 20 cases. Right now they're averaging close to 70. And so these kids are not being, there's no way they can do their job efficiently. No shame to them. You just can't, right? And so, you know, the ones that we talk to that already are working for the county are like, we can't wait till your facilities are up and running because it would make our lives so much easier. And so, you know, we just want to, I think once, long answer to your question, I think once we start getting some serious grants, it'll make it easier for more to happen. Yeah. But right now we haven't even attained our first one yet, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Well, I think to your point, you know, looking for a grant writer that could probably help you just figure out some of the shortcuts to take versus for you to try to attempt. And, you know, going back to being a startup, I think, you know, and I've gone through this myself too, where you don't necessarily sometimes have the budget to hire the pros. And so you try to do it all on your own, but then that prolongs the launch of this project that you're trying to do. And then sometimes you find yourself you know, less motivated. It's just difficult to, it's difficult to decide what to do, you know, and I think, and it's kind of nice to hear that from a nonprofit perspective too, that you somewhat go through the same stages that a profit, a company that's for profit would go through. But how do you, another question I want to ask is, obviously you have your full-time job, right? And then you're doing this. How are you juggling it all? And then being a mom and, you know, like, how do you pop?
Girl, you cry a lot. No, hours in your room. Give me a minute. Yeah, you know, I think the easiest way for me, right, and what works best for me is my calendar. I tell people, like, if you don't see me, if you say, Stevana, can we get on a call tomorrow at 1 o'clock? If you don't physically see me put it in my calendar right now while you say it, I'm not going to show up tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Yeah. And it's not because I meant to not come or that I didn't value your time. It's just that I have so much going on that if it ain't on the calendar, I'm not coming. And it's, I got to do better making sure stuff gets on the calendar, right? But that's it for me. My calendar, I have things that, like for my, like you said, for my business, I have a for-profit business. I do financial services, and I have things that I have to do every day for my business, right? And so those are time blocked and they're locked in every day, and I won't move those unless I have availability. So like, let's say I need to call clients, right, for my business. And I have that blocked out from 2 to 3 to an hour. If you call me and you say, hey, Stevana, I need you to do whatever for me from 2 to 3. If I have space to move that time block, I will. If not, I'm gonna tell you, sorry, I can't do it because my day's already booked, right? And so you have to be true to your calendar, true to yourself. I have time marked for self, like fill my own cup, right? Give me a minute. And I also, I take a lot of trips. My team will tell you, like, I left 4 days before our golf tournament. I came back the, like, 48 hours, 36 hours before the golf tournament. And it was just, I just needed some time away. You guys, I'm stressed out. You want me to go to the tournament like this? It's not going to be good for you.
Yeah.
So I do take trips, probably one a quarter. Like, I'll take a week and I go to wherever. But whatever your... whatever you need to do for self-care, right? Make sure that you're doing that and you're scheduling that just like you schedule every other meeting. Mm-hmm. If it's once a week that you need to go get your nails done or do your hair or take a nap, girl, naps.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it is for you. But for me, staying sane, because it's like you said, it's my for-profit business. It's a nonprofit. I help another organization. I have my city council stuff, and then I have my kids and all of their activities, right? So if it's not calendared, girl, I'm not going to be there.
You are so inspiring. I just had my third baby 3.5 months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's been, I forgot what it, my two older daughters are 15 and 16. So I really forgot what it takes to. Mm-hmm.
Start over. Girl, why do we do that? Why do we start over?
Yeah, we just forget. I think God has a way to make sure that we continue having babies, and just like all the difficult challenges are forgotten somehow, and you just remember the fun things. And
right,
yeah. And so it's been interesting trying to juggle it all. You know, run. You know, two teenagers in high school, and then a baby, and then I have two companies as well. I have a marketing agency, and then I have my Roma Leaf brand, which is the CBD brand. So it's been a lot to juggle. And then I have the radio show, and I need to take your advice with the calendar, because I don't think I do a good job with that. And what, well, I do when it comes to my clients and everything, it's all in the calendar, but I don't put my own time for self-care or whatever in the calendar. And I don't treat it as if it's important. I can't miss it, you know.
Girl, you cannot pour from an empty cup.
I agree.
Oh,
I agree.
Y'all could be mad at me all day. I'm taking a nap.
That's a good one. So tell me a little bit about the profit business. How can we support you there? Obviously, you know, I love supporting women. I do. I'm obsessed with entrepreneurship. I'm obsessed with supporting women. And so tell me a little bit about that, and then I'm just going to dive in a little bit into marketing, because, you know, as a marketing expert,
look,
I love marketing, giving back too.
Everyone, We about to hire you to do marketing because I'm over marketing. I'm overdoing all the things. I'm ready to outsource. Yeah, so my for-profit is Liberated Money Movement.
Okay.
And we are a financial marketing organization. And what we do is we basically just teach people how to make money, save money, and get out of debt, right? What I know personally is that nobody ever taught me the importance of life insurance. Nobody ever taught me the importance of retirement funding and infinite banking, right? And I didn't even know what infinite banking was, right? And so I feel like a lot of our communities, especially our Black and brown communities, we're missing that mark because the average agent is a 61-year-old white male. Now, there's nothing wrong with being 61 or a white male, right? Don't get me wrong. We're not knocking you. But what we do know is that typically folks buy and sell to and from people that look, talk, and act like them.
Yeah.
So the average agent is a 61-year-old white male. He's not talking to me and you, right? Yeah. He's not. So he's missing that. And so I'm just blessed to educate my community. I love what I do. You know, people, again, my family thinks I'm crazy. They're like, you spend how many hours and how much of that is where you're not getting paid? And it's just like, because I just want to make sure I educate my clients. You know, you talk to people and they say, oh, do you have life insurance? Oh yeah, I have through my job. Okay. What does that cover? I don't know.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. I don't need life insurance. I'm only 25. Look, that's the time to buy it. Cause it's only $5. Right. Yeah. And so I love what I do. I love, again, educating folks about finance and money because we missed that mark. They're not teaching us that in school. So I'm blessed to get paid handsomely for what I do. And I love it. So it's really the best of both worlds, being able to do my passion with my nonprofit and my newfound passion of, and I feel like it's just another way to give back to the community in financial services. So yeah, both of them are blessings.
That's awesome. And I think at the, you know, it's just, it all comes down to finding ways to help others. And it looks like that's all you're doing and everything, even for the profit business, you know, you're helping others. What are some of the ways that you're marketing yourself? Have you really, has it been word of mouth or have you done anything to test and grow further, scale your business?
For the for-profit, it's all social media. You know, people are always like, what's your website? And I'm like, I don't have one for my for-profit. Like, so it is either word of mouth referrals or, just, you know, I post subliminal, you know, messaging and what is it? Attraction marketing, on social media, but I don't, I'm not super pushy with the for-profit because I feel like I'm going to plant the seeds and y'all do what you want to do with it. I tell my people all on social media, especially more so on Facebook than on Instagram. Cause I feel like Facebook is more like my people. Nice. And Instagram is just like people. My Instagram people. I love y'all. But Facebook, we have conversations. Instagram is like likes and whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I tell them all the time, I say, look, you know, especially in August when that's Life Insurance Awareness Month, I post facts. Look, go, you don't have to buy your life insurance through me. That's no problem. Because some people say, well, you're just Stevana. Like, girl, you know, whatever they know me from in the past. But get it from somewhere.
Yeah.
Because I tell you what, I'm not going to donate to your GoFundMe. I'm not buying a taco plate unless I just happen to be hungry that day and I'm not coming to your car wash. Right. So, because I've educated you guys on a better way to do this. I also truly believe that, you know, this speaks to the Black community. We're talking, you know, Black Lives Matter and we're talking about police brutality and we're talking about all these things. Well, if all of us got life insurance policies, even if they were small ones, the life insurance companies would be fighting for those same justices, right?
A good point. Wow. You
know what I'm saying? Like, if I gotta pay out $1 million every time y'all kill a Black person,
guess what, I'm gonna
I'm just saying, you know, I truly feel like life insurance puts all of us one generation away from closing whatever wealth gap you have.
Yeah.
Right. And so I feel like I'm more passionate about my for-profit, right? But life insurance and financial services and just being aware of the different things, like I said, infinite banking, right? Being able to borrow money against yourself. You listen to like Waka Flocka and a bunch of people, they're telling you, I'm not going to ever put my money in the bank again.
Yeah.
They're doing this.
Yeah.
And they're becoming their own banks. And it's just like mind blown that I was 36.
Yeah.
Totally. When I learned these principles, and it's crazy.
Same here. Well, thanks to our education system, you know, we don't get to learn what's important, what's necessary to survive.
Preach.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, Have you dabbled into TikTok at all? I feel like you would just blow up on TikTok.
I do a lot of reels. I need to just do them in TikTok. What I don't like is that even though TikTok now I think will transfer over to Instagram and Facebook, I don't like that they brand your videos.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know that maybe you could pay now. Like, I don't know all the details. Maybe I could pay to not have their brand on my stuff, but I have it. I think I have a TikTok. I definitely have a TikTok page. And when I first started doing videos, that's where I started, because that's where you did videos.
Right.
But now I'm more of the reels on Instagram. And but I should probably do TikTok.
It's so much work. It's so much work. Honestly, yeah. I feel like when it comes to marketing anything, whether it's your nonprofit and you trying to raise money, or if it's the for-profit, marketing in itself is like a beast. It's just like if you don't market it the right way, you don't get the attention you deserve. But it's all nowadays with social media. I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, with social media, it's so much easier. But that itself is a job to create videos, to be able content. To get out there, to post, to. I just personally, I don't know. I no comments on that because I'm in the space. And but
well, look, you know, how do we hire you to do that for us? Because I don't want to do it either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, that's our job. And, you know, we love it. But for personal use, when it comes for me to personally do it, I'm so exhausted at the end of the day where I'm like, I don't want to go on social media and post about my life,
right.
My tips about marketing or my tips about entrepreneurship. I'm so tired of it already. But you know, one thing that we've seen over and over a lot of success with is influencer marketing.
Right.
And the reason why we've seen, and you know, one thing that my agency does that's a little bit different from other marketing agencies is that we use impactors and impressors, we call them. We don't call them influencers. Okay. And the impactors and the impressors, they're sort of two different groups of people. Impactors are pretty much anybody and everybody that has, a follower. And it could be 1,000 followers. It could be 500 followers. But they're the people that make the most impact, because if they have a smaller follower number, then the chances are their followers are going to take action on whatever they're saying, versus the people that have millions of followers, then their engagement rate is lower because they're impressing, they're not impacting. So we sort of bucket people in two different groups. And when a brand or a product, service, whatever the brand is that's they're trying to shine a light on their own product or service, we try to, depending on what the goal is, if it's something that you want to, you know, you want people to take action, then we go after impactors. We go after the influencers that are impactors. They're smaller, micro, nano influencers, yeah. Real people, moms, teachers, depending on the product or service. Mm-hmm. Now, if we want to build that brand awareness, and if they have the huge budgets, then we go after the impressors. But my sweet spot has just been impactors, you know, smaller micro influencers that can use the product or service and authentically talk about it. And so, you know, with your financial service, I highly recommend you maybe start thinking about connecting with some influencers and say, hey, listen, I'll give you an hour of free consultation. In return, all I want is for you to just do a story about your experience with my company, or post my next webinar that I'm going to do and help me promote it. So it's a really efficient way to build a brand, but not only build a brand and create awareness, but also have people take actions. Mm-hmm. And webinars have been really helpful for us too. Webinars have been so helpful, especially for my Roma Leaf company, because we gather people, experts, doctors, and then we do these, at first, the first three that we did were in-person workshops rather than webinars. And then we decided to go online so that we could be able to invite more people, because with the in-person one and with COVID, Los Angeles is still so, well, not as bad, but back then they were still the 6 feet apart. Rules and regulations were important, so we had to abide by that. But that helped us a lot too. We just give free information and people come sign up. And then if they're interested in the service or the product, they, you know, you build that trust.
Yeah.
If you haven't done that, I highly, highly recommend that. It's a great way to, even though we're all sick of Zoom, but but at the end of the day, you know, it's the way to connect at this point.
I'm not sick of it. It means I don't have to leave my house if I don't want to, or I could take a meeting in my car, right? So it works for me.
I know it works for me too. I love it. I used to take Zoom meetings back in 2012, 2013, because the most of the clients that we serve are in the tech industry space and very advanced, and they really didn't believe in in-person meetings. They're like, oh, that's too much of a waste of time. I'm not going to drive an hour to come and meet with you. Let's do it over Zoom. Yeah. And I remember back then my friends would be like, what? You do all your meetings on Zoom? That's so uncomfortable. What if the internet slows down or whatever? I'm like, well, and then now the transition for me, for our team, was so easy because we're like, oh my God, it's about time that everyone else get on this, you know?
Yeah.
So we love it. We love it. But again, I want to go back to the nonprofit and just remind us how people, our listeners, can support you. Yes. Where should they go if they want to sponsor you, or if they want to, you know, just donate money? Where should they go?
Awesome. Yeah. So our website is Havens with an S, havensfuture.org. You can donate. There's donate buttons everywhere on the site if you want to just donate. We also, on the site, we have a tab called, I think it's Join the Movement, I think is what the tab is. And that's basically what we're looking for is 1,000 families. We have a movement called 1,000 Families Stand. We partner with some other agencies who are looking. What we want to do is we want to compile 1,000 families that feel like they've been wrongfully affected by CFS. And when you know, just me telling my story could be some of you probably thinking one crazy chick that probably really did do something and whatever, right? But if 1,000 of us are standing together and we're saying this is what's happening to us, then it's harder for them to ignore us while we're trying to change legislation and we're trying to do all these different things. So you can go to the website, you can become a sponsor. Rose, I think, is working on putting our sponsorship levels up, because this is, you were now the second person to ask, like, how can we sponsor, you know, on a bigger scale. And so hopefully that's up. I should have checked before I got on this call. But you can always donate, and then you can contact with us, connect with us, and then we can, you know, work that out with you guys. But we're doing some different sponsorship levels and what you will get in return for your sponsorship at those different levels. All of that can happen on havensfuture.org. You can definitely check out, learn more about my story, our team, all that stuff, and exactly what we're doing with those different programs. It's all on the site. That's really the best way to connect with us. We do have an Instagram. If you guys want to follow our Instagram, don't judge us. We got like 25 followers. It's again, Havens_future is our handle on Instagram. We have a Facebook page, Havens Future. That's even less active than the Instagram, which is why we need to hire somebody to do the marketing. That's really the best way to reach us. If you want to just get info about Havens Future, you can email us at info@havensfuture.org. That's really the awesome. Love your support in any way.
Of course. And we'll share everything in our show notes too. So if listeners want to make sure they're donating, they go to the right site. And then for the for-profit, how can people find you?
Yeah. So that's easier. That's just Stevana Evans is my handle on every social media platform.
I
definitely work word of mouth. I don't do no cold calling. I'm not knocking on nobody's door. If you want my services, you want me to help you, I'm here for you. But all of the information and things that I do, you'll see on Instagram is probably the easiest way to see what I'm doing. I'm always making crazy reels that probably have nothing to do with financial services, but they get your attention.
That matters. Hey, that's all that matters. You get their attention. It's the right world out there.
I'm saying.
Yep. Well, yeah. Thank you so much, Stevana. It's been a pleasure. You've taught us so much today, and it's so inspiring. And I'm sorry that you had to go through all of that to start this amazing movement. But like you said, you know, we're all here for a reason. And at times when we're going through challenges, it's hard to see the reason, but then eventually it all comes together. And I'm so, so happy that you exist to make this amazing change, and anything we can do to support you, we're here. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. I'm so excited, and I look forward to working with you more on other projects. Let's connect on that marketing thing for a little.
Yes, we'll do. Thank you. Good luck.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Please comment, like, and share. Want to reach us? Connect on social media @Maria with the Y.